Now, we are in the moment that we start with the second part of self-education through the stories of Mrs. Nakhchavani. Please.
You know these stories that I have collected slowly, slowly? They have a purpose behind them. It is not just stories. I'm trying very hard to tell you about lives that are so different from one another. These are not all the same. People that I'm talking about, they are the two ends of the whatever, my English is gone too. Yes. So when you are talking so much about unity, this is another part to remember, that they have been in the history of our cause, men and women who championed the cause of Baha'u'llah. They became heroes in this cause. And they were so different from one another. And sometimes I think if we put all of them in one community, boy oh boy, we will have quite a clash. Because they were such strong individuals with their own opinions and personalities. They were not wishy-washy people. Ruhi Khanum used to say often, whenever she came across such problems of disunity in her trips, she had one word, one sentence that she would repeat. She used to say, this cause of Baha'u'llah is so big, is so great. It can take all kinds of people in it. All kinds of characteristics and people can come within this cause and be allowed to serve their own ways. We have Baha'is, thank God, the majority, who are able to work together, to consult together, and to plan together. But we also have Baha'is who are such individuals that they cannot work with anybody else. They are loners. And in our lives, Ali and I have seen some of these wonderful people. And we saw how, for example, Shoghi Effendi treated them. Would pick one of these people and give that person something to do, a special service, and would leave them alone, let them do it. Because he knew that they can do their best if they are alone. They take the order from him and they do it. So I'm saying this so that we can remember these stories we are telling and hearing about. They are very different people. I spoke yesterday about May Bowles Maxwell. Now, she was a person, an embodiment of love, of nurturing, of mothering. This was her personality. She was so full of love that no one could come across her in life and not receive some of that love. It was just like a fountain pouring out of her. And she was forbearance, she was forgiving. This was her nature. This was one personality. Then today I'm going to tell you the story of another woman. And it's so wonderful that so many of these heroes of our faith, particularly in the West, they were women. This woman was extraordinary. The reason why I picked her up today to speak about it was especially because of this beautiful video, first thing in the morning, when our Romanian friends showed of Queen Mary of Romania and her statements about the faith. This is Marcia Ruth. We have heard Marsha Ruth all our lives. We have heard of her services. We have been proud of her. Shoghi Effendi spoke of her as the star servant of the cause, the star teacher in the cause of Baha'u'llah. In Persian, he said that she was the pride of all men and women in the Baha'i world. She was an extraordinary woman. But who was she? What kind of a personality was she? How did she start? What family she was born in? What environment she grew up? And I want to say a little bit about it, because in detail you can read the book that had been written about her and about her life, which is in detail and it's very beautiful. But I want to just go a little bit into her personal life and speak about this woman who became the star teacher of our cause. First of all, I go on with my stories according to Ali's presentations every day. Still, we are in the period of the divine plans of Abdu'l-Bahá. We have not come yet to the 10-year crusade. I have many exciting stories of that time because I was myself part of it. So I was a witness, an onlooker. I can tell you more later, but these are the stories of the period of the divine plans of Abdu'l-Bahá. Abdu'l-Bahá at the end of one of these tablets said something which for the last almost 8 years have been the cause of movement, of heroic efforts and acts from Baha'is from East and West, from Africa and from Asia and from all over the world. It's a small sentence, and it's a plea. It is like a cry of the heart of Abdu'l-Bahá at the age he was, old and broken physically. He said, "Oh, that I could travel, even though on foot and in the utmost poverty, to those regions, and raising the call of Ya Baha'u'l-Abha in cities, villages, mountains, deserts, and oceans. Promote the divine teaching. This, alas, I cannot do. How intensely I deplore it. Please God, ye may achieve it." How many Baha'is that we know that who left their homes and went into the jungles and the deserts for this one word of Abdu'l-Bahá. They tried to do what he wanted to do and he couldn't do at the end of his life. When these divine tablets of Abdu'l-Bahá reached the Baha'is in America, thank God that they were few believers who arose instantly and in the lifetime of Abdu'l-Bahá moved out of their homes and they did travels and pioneerings. One of them was Marsha Ruth. Now Marsha Ruth was born in a home, in a family of very, very devoted Christians. Her father was a canon in the Baptist Church, and you know the Baptist Church in the United States is a pretty fanatical sect of Christianity. She was brought up in that atmosphere, in that home. She was a very intelligent, individualistic person, and thank God she was in America, so as a woman she was able to go to college and to study and to have a good education. She became a teacher. She was in love with English language. And she became a principal in a school that was too closed in. She couldn't bear it. She came out and she took for some years to teach Shakespeare in the university. She loved that. That was also too much holding her down. So she became a journalist. and that gave her more freedom to see people. But it's very interesting to see what she did at the beginning of her journalism. It's very fascinating when I read this. You know, we have only seen Martha Ruth in her photograph towards the end of her life, when she was a very simple-looking woman, not very beautiful. You know, you never thought that this woman in this picture, once upon a time, was a journalist who loved to report. She moved from her own hometown and she went to Pittsburgh, that in those days was the place, the center of money and developments and everything. And it was the period, 1900, when the motor cars had just come out. So she became a fast writer about the motorists and the motor cars and the latest models, and she would go from one party to another to meet these people who were motorists and their women who were dressed in Paris. They were very wealthy people. She really became a journalist of the social people, socialist people of her time. It was there that she met with a lot of missionaries. Because Pittsburgh was the center of money in that time, a lot of missionaries had come to Pittsburgh trying to get money out of the wealthy people for their missions in Africa and in South America and so on. So she moved also with the missionaries. One day in a cafe, she was sitting with this group of missionaries, and one of the missionaries expressed himself very loudly the fact that, after all, you know, people are not, unless they are Christian, they are heathens. You have to be Christian. And by Christian, he meant Presbyterian, mind you, not just any Christian. Unless you are a Presbyterian Christian, then you are a heathen. So this nobody else in the world is saved except that. Martha Ruth was a young woman and moving amongst them. She loudly expressed her own view that she couldn't believe that that was true, that she felt that other people, maybe if they had a belief, that they had a right to salvation too. Now, it just happened that one of the Baha'is was sitting at another table. His name was Harry... what was his name? I forgot. Roy Wilhelm, that's right. Roy Wilhelm. Now, Roy Wilhelm was one of the most wonderful Baha'is of America, and he heard this. So he thought, this woman has something, you know, it's a good to reach her, because she has expressed a view which was close to the faith. So Roy came afterwards forward when this group got up to go, and he said, excuse me, I couldn't help hearing what you said, but I want to tell you about Abdul Baha and what Abdul Baha had said, that humanity is one and this and that. He started expressing all the teachings, and of course the missionaries were not interested. But Martha Ruth took her card out and gave it to Roy, and she said, send me some books. I'm busy now, but send me something to read. And you know, for a whole year, this dear man sent Martha Ruth books. There weren't many books, papers and pamphlets and anything about the faith, prayers. And Martha Ruth was so busy, she never had time to read these. So she would receive these things, and whenever she found somebody who was spiritually a bit attuned, she would give these things to them. She never read. She didn't know what this man was talking about. But Roy Wilhelm never failed to see her whenever he was in Pittsburgh. And, you know, this perseverance of the teachers, it's something unbelievable. I sometimes think I put myself on the place of that man. And she was very open with him. When he would say, did you read it? She would say, no, I haven't had time yet, but I will one day. I would have probably given up. I said, well, this woman isn't interested. But not Roy Wilhelm. He would just continue, send pamphlets and send papers and send books, and try to see Mars Route. And eventually, Mars Route in Chicago was probably cornered somewhere. And the first American Baha'i, Thornton Chase, told her about the faith, and she became a believer. Now her life completely changed. One of the first things she did, she wrote a paper, an article in the paper about the Bab and the Baha'i teachings in her own hometown, where her father was a very well-known, the family were very well-known and loved. She was very badly persecuted. They wrote against her, they stood up in the church and spoke against her, and she was really persecuted in her own hometown. Her own parents were very wonderful people, the father and the mother. They never became believers, but they were with her. Now, in 1915, she decided that she wanted... She had something in her that was, I love more than anything else in Mars Route. She had that spirit of adventure in her. She could not be put down. She was a person who wanted to go and see for herself the world and the people of the world. In 1915, earlier on, she made a trip to South America, but in 1915, she decided to go and see Abdu'l-Bahá for herself. She reached Egypt. It was in the middle of the war. It was not possible for an American to get into Palestine. And so she went on to India and to Burma and to China, and one of her long trips. And then she went back home. Now she started, Abdu'l-Bahá started, the tablets of Abdu'l-Bahá to her began from the very beginning that she had become a Baha'i. Pouring encouragement to her, encouraging her to travel, encouraging her to teach. But she was by nature a traveler. She came back from that trip and she was tied down to her parents' home for a period of time because her mother died and she felt she had to take care of her father. And she stayed on with the father. But in between, whenever she would find a little time, off she would go on a trip. Now, when the divine tablets of Abdu'l-Bahá came, she was one of the first one who was hit by these divine tablets. And she decided that she has to go to South America for Abdu'l-Bahá. And she was the first American who left the shores of the United States and went down all over South America and traveled, and wherever she went, because she was a journalist, she was able to get in touch with newspapers, she was able to write articles, she was able to teach the faith in that way. Now, she came back, Abdu'l-Bahá passed away. She was never able to go and see Abdu'l-Bahá. And it was a very great sorrow in her life, because she tried in 1915 and she wasn't able to see him. And afterwards, she was not able to go. And when by the time she was ready to go, Abdu'l-Bahá had passed away. The same year that Abdu'l-Bahá passed away, Martha Root's father died. And then all the obstacles, so to speak, was removed from her life. From then on, from 1921 onward, Martha Root never sat down. She just continuously traveled. She was very ill. Sometime when at this period, she became very ill and she had a very severe operation. And whatever was, it frightened her terribly of operations. So from then on, she was often ill, but she would not see a doctor because she was afraid that if she sees a doctor, the doctor will say something serious is the matter with her, and if there is something serious the matter with her, they are going to put her in hospital and she won't be troubled. She was in the days of Abdul Baha, when she went to South America, she was very ill. And one night she sat down and wrote a letter to Abdul Baha. And he said that she was so ill that she needed his help. And Abdul Baha wrote her and said that I have prayed for you. And Martha Ruth recovered, and she believed that that prayer of Abdul Baha, that tablet of Abdul Baha, was her healing. And all through her life, this tablet went with her everywhere, and whenever she was very ill, that she would stay a little bit, she read the tablet, she was sure in her own heart that she would be all right. In one of her trips when she went to China and to Japan, she traveled with another wonderful hand of the cause of God, Agnes Alexander. And it is very adorable to see in the notes and the writings of Agnes, and also to memoirs of Martha Ruth, they were, again, two people so completely different in character and in their personality and in the way of their lives that was unbelievable. And then Martha Ruth writes in her own notes that how hard it was to put up, you know, with the slowness of Agnes. She was very fast. Agnes was very slow. She wasn't afraid of anything. Agnes was very careful of not to say anything to the Japanese to, you know, make them unhappy in their cultural ways. Martha Ruth didn't care about anybody's culture. She felt that she had something to say. All right, she will say it. And, you know, Japan, I don't know if any of you have been to Japan. I have been to Japan only maybe 25 years ago, which is very modern Japan. But Japan of early 1902 and 3 and 4 was a Japan of such tradition that you could not walk without thinking of how you should take your first step and so on. I remember when Ruhi Khanum went on a tour of Japan, I was terrified because everywhere we entered, you had to take your shoes off first at the entrance to the house. Then when you went into the house, if you want, excuse me, to go to the bathroom, at the door of the bathroom, you changed again your shoes and went into the bathroom, came out, you put the other shoes on, you came out. When you went out, you put another. It was these shoes alone really terrified me. I remember once we went to a private museum and in the middle of this, and there was a very important person who was showing the museum to Ruhi Khanum. And in the middle of it, she excused herself to go to the bathroom. I went with her, and she forgot to change the shoes. And you should have seen the silence, you know, in there, as if some great crime has taken place. Now, if this was the Japan of 1978, 79, you can imagine what it was in 1902 and 3. And with the free spirit of Martha Ruth, poor Agnes Alexander had a lot of trouble, you know, trying to hold her down. Nevertheless, they were two lovers of the cause, lovers of Abdul Baha, and they were able to work together, and they traveled all through Japan and all through China. She fell in love with China. That became her love, and many, many times, whenever she went to the east, she would tour the whole of China. Now, she came to visit, after the war, she came to visit Shoghi Effendi in 1923. It was her first pilgrimage. Now, Shoghi Effendi was setting up the Baha'i Bureau in Geneva. And he needed someone to hold it and to take care of it. So he thought Martha Ruth was the best person. She was very wonderful in meeting people and presenting the faith. And he asked her to go and establish this Baha'i Bureau. Marsha Ruth went, she could not stay more than a few months. This was too much, tying her down to an office. That was not life of Marsha Ruth. She stayed there for a few months until she found somebody else to train them and give them, and off she went again. She traveled all over Europe. It was in this period of 1920s, from 25 onward, when she was able to reach Queen Marie, and this was really the crown of her life. And the friendship, personal friendship that she established with the Queen was another side of her life, that how much she was loved and admired by that woman. In one of her travels, she became often ill. In one of the travels, she came to the Holy Land. Shoghi Effendi called her and asked her to go to Iran because there was a great persecution, and he wanted her to go and help. Maybe as a journalist, she could help the Baha'is. And that 4 months that Marsha Ruth traveled throughout Iran was a very wonderful thing. There are many, many Baha'is that met her. There are so many photographs in villages and in small towns that she took with Baha'is. But one important thing that Marsha Ruth did in Iran, which was unique, because nobody had been able to do it, neither before nor since Marsha Ruth, and that was the contact, the close contact with the family of Tahereh. She went to Qazvin. How did she manage to do that? This is, for me, is a mystery. I wish somebody would one day explain it. The family of Tahereh are very, today, even today, they are very, very fanatical people. All the terrible slanders that was really targeted, Tahereh was targeted to, and her name was targeted, came from her own family. They were extremely fanatical enemies of the cause. And they never allowed the Baha'is to go near them, allowing them to go to the house, to meet the family, to get any information. And Marsha Ruth, an American woman, how she did it, I don't know. But she managed to go in Qazvin to the home of the families of Tahereh. And this beautiful book that she has written about Tahereh, a lot of the information comes firsthand that she got from the family. Now, when she was really tired and very ill, very often at this time, she would receive these most beautiful cables of Shoghi Effendi, which Shoghi Effendi poured out. You know, if you read some of, I'm sure in the book you have noticed, some of the letters and cables of Shoghi Effendi, almost all of them, addresses her. This is very unusual. They are very few. Addresses her as dearest Martha. He was concerned about her health, about her money situation, that she would never want to ask for help. But there was Shoghi Effendi, as he called himself, a true brother, watching over Marsha Ruth, every step she was taking, pouring encouragement to her, announcing to the Baha'i world of the services that she was rendering. And it was so wonderful that Marsha Ruth was able to give such joy to Shoghi Effendi. Any of you who have read this wonderful book of Ruhi Khanum, The Priceless Pearl, you will see that in this book how much Ruhi Khanum has given to Shoghi, relationship of Marsha Ruth to Shoghi Effendi, the correspondence of Marsha Ruth with Shoghi Effendi, because she was the cause of such joy to the heart of Shoghi Effendi. Marsha Ruth, as you know, died in Hawaii. On her last trip, she became very ill, and she died there of cancer. She suffered from this cancer for many, many years. the pain and the suffering that she had physically was the cause of it, was this cancer that eventually in Hawaii killed her. Today her grave is really a place of almost pilgrimage for anybody who goes through Honolulu. And it's a wonderful thing to be at that gravesite. Now, this is the general life of Martha Ruth. But then there are some little personal things that I had heard about Martha Ruth that I want to tell you. One of it was that Ruhi Khanum used to tell this story. She said she was 16 years old, and it was that time that so much praises of Martha Ruth from the pen of Shoghi Effendi would come. And Ruhi Khanum said, you know, at the age of 15, 16, you are very self-conscious and self-centered. And she said, I adored my mother. And I thought that there is no one in the world like my mother. And she said, this was for me a question mark. Who is this Martha Ruth? She said, I knew her. I had seen her as a child. But who was she compared to my mother? Why is it that Shoghi Effendi speaks so much about her? So Martha Ruth came to Montreal. Ruhi Khanum was 16 years old. She said, first of all, I was very surprised to look at her because she was so kind of dowdy, you know. She didn't have beautiful clothes. She didn't dress up well. She was very plain. And she said this for me. At the age of 16, I didn't think much. She arrived and she had written. They had arranged for her to come on a teaching trip. And she had asked Mrs. Maxwell to arrange for her to see the director of the radio station in Montreal. And so Mrs. Maxwell had gone. She was a very well-known woman. She had many friends. And she had gone to this man, and this fellow said, look, this is a Catholic country, and I have instructions. I cannot give you time to anybody to speak about Baha'i faith. She can come and speak about her travels, but she must not mention the name Baha'i. No matter what Mrs. Maxwell, how she tried to plead, the man said, I cannot do it. But she can come. And she can talk about her trips. When Martha Ruth arrived, Mrs. Maxwell told her that this is what has happened. She didn't say anything. The next morning, they had an appointment to see this man. And Ruhi Khanum said she never forgot Martha Ruth. She came down the steps, and she said in their home, I don't know, you know, the Maxwell home, which is now a shrine in Montreal. It's a very beautiful house, and it must have been very beautiful in the days that the Maxwells lived in it, because Mr. Maxwell was an artist, was an antique collector. He had beautiful things. Everything in that house was really essence of beauty. And Ruhi Khanum said always on their entrance there was a mirror, and in front of the mirror they had flowers. And at that day, they had a huge bowl full of tulips. And Khanum said that I was watching, you know, to see what is going to happen now. And said Martha Ruth came down the steps. She had one look at this bunch of tulips. She took one tulip out in her hand with nothing around it. And Khanum said Montreal was a very, very reserved community. People had ways, you know, flower, first of all, you didn't take it just like that in your hand. It had to be beautifully put in a paper and arranged. Martha Ruth took one and started going out of the door. She said they went together, the taxi came to take them, and Khanum said, I stood at the door, watched this woman with one flower in her hand. And she said, I thought to myself, there's something wrong there. And she said they went to the radio station. And when they came back, she said, my mother told me what happened. You know, when Ali was talking about purity of motive, This was the real essence of Marsha Ruth. Her motive was almost 100% pure. Somehow, whatever she did, she had no personal interest in it. Mrs. Maxwell told the story that how she arrived in the room of this man, the director of the radio station in Montreal, a very important person. She walked straight to him with her tulip in her hand and offered it to the man. Said this man looked at her, his eyes filled with tears. He said, "How did you know I am a Dutchman?" She didn't know. She said, "This is my national flower. How did you know that?" Marsha Ruth didn't know it. But what made her to do something like that, it was that she was that pure, pure channel that Baha'u'llah used. And she did things that was so wonderful. Another thing that Ruhi Khanum used to explaining, you know, talking about Marsha Ruth, because she adored Marsha Ruth. And she used to say Marsha Ruth believed that this message of Baha'u'llah is the greatest treasure, the greatest jewel in the world. That she was going to see a queen, or she was seeing a president, or she was seeing somebody important. Therefore, she must give them the most precious, the most valuable treasure that she has. And there is nothing more precious than the message of Baha'u'llah. She offered it like that. It was an honor for the receiver to receive something which was so precious and unequal. She used to say another thing about Marsha Ruth, that was again the same, came to the same thing, that she was so pure in her motive. You know, she used to give in her travels, wherever she went, she used to give public talks. Ruhi Khanum said she stayed in Montreal 5 days. And every night she had a public talk in different places. She said Khanum had a friend who was a very intelligent, intellectual student in the university, and they were trying to teach him the faith. And so they had spoken so much about Marsha Ruth, he decided to go and listen to her. And after all the 5 talks were over, he came to the home of the Maxwells, and he said, "I cannot understand." He said, "I went to these 5 talks of Marsha Ruth because each of them were publicized with a different title. You know, it wasn't all the same. But she said the same talk 5 times. He said that I listened to her. There was everything she said, if I want to boil it down, I can say it in 2 sentences. But what was in that woman? What she said, it took you, it went into your heart, it went into your soul. She captivated her audience. What it was that love that she had in her heart, and that she had put herself, she used to say, Ruhi Khanum said, so often she heard Marsha Ruth saying this sentence, "Step aside, let Baha'u'llah do it. Don't stand in the way of Baha'u'llah. Step aside and let Baha'u'llah do it." This was her motto, so to speak, in life. This was the wonderful, wonderful person that I thought we should hear of, because you are living, all of you, in Europe, and there is another woman who is the pride of not only the continent of Europe, but the pride of the Baha'i world. She is a person that throughout this dispensation will always be known as the star teacher of our faith. We should follow her examples and try to be like her. I don't know if I can tell you another story, yes, or the time is finished. Mm-hmm. Yes? And another one, another such person, very different in personality, who also rose in the lifetime of Abdu'l-Bahá and became the cause of the joy of heart of Abdu'l-Bahá, and left United States, you know, after reading the Divine Plan, was called Leonora Armstrong. She's not known as the way Marcia Ruth is known, but she was in her own right and in her own place a very, very great and wonderful human being. I had the privilege, I never saw Marcia Ruth, but I had the privilege of meeting Leonora Armstrong. She was a young woman from a very, very humble background and family. She had become Baha'i in New York through Mae Maxwell. And when these divine plans came, she was a teacher in school. She wanted so much to leave and go to South America and teach the faith. Her whole family said that how can everybody turn against it? A woman, a single young woman, to go to South America is murder, is disaster. You cannot do it. So she came to Mae Maxwell in one of her trips that she was in New York, and she told her that this is what in my heart, I don't know what to do, my family say that, I am frightened. And Mae Maxwell was a mountain of encouragement, just poured her life on her and encouraged her. And she said, go, I wish I was free like you, I wish I had the youth, I wish I had the time to do what you can do. You go, don't wait. And Leonora herself told me this story. She said, when I was leaving New York to go, Mae Maxwell took me to, she said, she was a very, very, as I say, from a very humble background. She said she took me to the best, most expensive department store in New York, and she bought me clothes like as if I was going on a marriage trip. Said she bought me all the silk underwear and a silk dress, like a bridal trousseau that she gave her. She said, you are going on this trip, I want you to go as a bride. And this wonderful young woman alone, she left and she went to Brazil. She has fantastic, she had wonderful stories of how she arrived and she didn't have much money, and the only place she could rent at the beginning was a garage in the family, in a home of a big family. They rented her the garage. The weather was very hot. This was in El Salvador, Bahia, which is a very hot place. It was very hot. And she said, when I closed the door of the garage, I'd suffocate. And she said, if I opened the door and there were bunches of flowers that young men would throw into her garage, you know, trying to express their feelings towards her. So she had very, very rough time, but she settled and she lived there. She married there and she established the faith in Brazil. She was the person who opened this beautiful, big country of Brazil. And it was so wonderful. In 1996, in one of the last trips that Ruhi Khanum did, was the last time she went to South America, we went to Brazil because they celebrated the 70 years after she had gone, Leonora had gone and opened the country to the cause of Baha'u'llah. And she, at the end, what she did, the service she did there was so wonderful. She opened a kind of an orphanage, and she took in her home. She trained, she had no children of her own, but she brought up and educated 18 children. That from some of them babies that people would come and put outside her door, and she would take in and she would bring them up. And then she had an orphanage that to this day still is running by other people. But she was a very wonderful people. She was another one who was able to bring joy to Abdul Baha in his whole lifetime. Because these divine plans of Abdul Baha, very few responded in his lifetime. These were the few people who did. And another one, and that would be the last one for today, was Haidan, who was also with his dear wife in lifetime of Abdul Baha, was able to leave United States and go all the way to Australia and open Australia to the faith. These were such unique and wonderful human beings that if we study their lives and read about their methods of teaching, it is the greatest lesson for us how to follow. These are our role models. They are there for us to follow in their footsteps. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yesterday, one of this girl here in this gathering told me that really never we are tired to listen to you. And she said it's like to listen, she said, listen to my grandmother, you know, in front of a fire, and you know, but I said maybe mother is better than grandmother.
grandmother is very good.
So, and really, we are never tired to listen to you. Thank you so much. So we close with the last announcement. You know, this evening we start with our artistic workshops. And I want to welcome Mrs. Margaret Appa, that she came from United Kingdom to here just for help us in the seminars and in this workshop, artistic workshops. And really, thank you very much, Margaret. So the painting workshops is in the end of the restaurant. Yeah, the mosaic the tutor of this workshop is Nadir, and it is in the third floor. Luca Morisco is for music and is in this hall. And Sara Ceccherini for the theater is in the terrace. She's here. Yeah, yes, she's here. Sara Ceccherini, the paper, colored paper. So after now we start with our study time. And then we have our dinner, and at 8:30 we go directly to our artistic workshops.